So as we now begin a closer, journey into this mystery, I suppose we should, and the only way to do it is to do it prayerfully, because we're really on very sacred ground, and we're asking to explore the mystery of the most intimate love that Jesus had with God. So it's a delicate journey, and Jesus' own prayer is that God would reveal something to us as we make the journey. Out of that context of prayer and revelation, it's we can't possibly see anything. Well, now I'd like to examine a bit more closely with you. What is this extraordinary relationship between Jesus and God that enabled Jesus to call God Father and enabled Jesus to see himself and others to see him as the Son of God? I've taken, as you can see there, I've taken four images just from our own life, because I think that's obviously where we've got to start. And the four I've taken are these. What is the relationship between a son and a father anyhow? Because the terminology is not arbitrary. One, a son receives his life from his father, obviously. Two, a son receives instruction from his father. This was in their world and in ours, hopefully. Three, the life and instruction that the son hands on, or to his own children, is the life and instruction that he received from his father. And fourthly, the son is the living image of the father. Chip off the old block, we might say, or the dead spit of his dad, but getting more gentle terminology, the living image of his father. Taking those four, and let's look, and we find that the way they speak of Jesus. That's the way the text refer to him. Firstly, the son receives life from the father. There are two lovely texts in John's Gospel, chapter 3, verse 35, where Jesus says, "The Father loves the Son and has entrusted everything to him." And again, a beautiful image you might like to hold in your mind after tonight, where Jesus says in John 6:57, "I myself draw life from the Father." So, simply putting it to you, Jesus is the Son because he is and is conscious of the fact that his life, the source of his life, is God. Secondly, he received his instructions from God, his revelation from God, his learning from God. The very opening text in Luke's Gospel, when Jesus, just after the scene we've just looked at, goes into Galilee and begins his preaching. You'll recall he went into his hometown, first sermon, and he opens the scroll and rolls it open till he finds the text, and we're told he found the place where it is written, Luke chapter 4, "The Spirit of the Lord has been given to me, for he has anointed me," says Jesus. "He sent me to bring the good news to the poor, to proclaim liberty to captives, to the blind new sight, and to set the downtrodden free, and to proclaim the Lord's year of favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the assistant, and sat down. And all eyes in the synagogue were fixed on him. He began to speak to them. "This text is being fulfilled today, even as you listen." Right through the evidence we have in the documents of the Gospels, the New Testament, we find Jesus very aware that he has a mission, a call, an instruction, a will, a destiny given him by his Father. "I have not come of myself. No, there is one who sent me, and I really come from him. You do not know him, but I know him, because I've come from him, and it's he who sent me." It's John 7:28. that time when they accused Jesus of claiming to be God's equal in John chapter 5. He said, I tell you most solemnly, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can only do what he sees the Father doing. And whatever the Father does, the Son does too. He has to learn. I'm learning from my Father, listening to him, obeying him. Don't accuse me of claiming to be his equal. John 8:29, He who sent me is with me, and he has not left me to myself, because I always do what pleases him. Thirdly, Jesus not only received his life and his instruction from his Father, and there are many, many other texts which you're familiar with, I'm sure, talking about Jesus' obedience, but the instructions he gave others and the life he gave others came from God. Luke 22, Now I confer a kingdom on you just as my Father conferred one on me. John 5, The Father who is the source of life has made the Son the source of life. I call you friend because I have made known to you everything I have learnt from my Father. His words came from God, his Father. My teaching is not from myself. It comes from the one who sent me. And if anyone is prepared to do his will, he will know whether my teaching is from God or whether my doctrine is my own. What I, for my part, speak of is what I have seen with my Father. And not only his words, but his actions. John chapter 5, verse 36. The works my Father has given me to carry out, these same works of mine testify that the Father has sent me. So that all Jesus said and all he did, those who watched him, and that's what we're trying to do, discerned a mystery and an intimacy and a prayer in there that made them, they had to say that it was all coming from somewhere. And it was all coming from this relationship that he had with God, whom he called Father. Finally, Jesus is the living image of his Father. When people looked at Jesus' face, they later realized what they sensed in his presence anyhow, that they were looking on the face of God. They later realized what they didn't quite understand, obviously, at the time, that when they listened to his words, they were listening to God speaking to them. Something in their response was going in that direction, but it took, I presume, years for them to, I suppose they never really obviously comprehended that mystery. But they say it often again. John portrays Jesus as saying, if you did know me, you would know my Father as well. And you can imagine any son saying that, can't you, about his Father? If you knew me, you'd know Dad. And it's a simple little human, humble, ordinary statement. But he's not talking about anyone else. He's talking about God. If you knew me, you would know my Father, God. At the Last Supper, whoever sees me sees the one who sent me. Remember, Philip said, look, show us the Father and we'll be content. And he says, have you been with me all this time, Philip, and you still don't know me? To have seen me is to have seen my Father. Something of this intimacy, this life relationship between Jesus and his Father, occurs in a very lovely parable in the Synoptic Gospels. And a lot of that material I've been reading to you is from John, as you know, who really explores this intimate relationship much more deeply than the others. But it's there in Mark chapter 12, verse 6. Jesus talks just before his passion, a parable about the tenants of a vineyard who, instead of giving the produce, were keeping it for themselves, and the master of the vineyard sent servants in, you might recall, and he says how they killed them and just whatever. Then he sent more servants in and they killed them too. And then he says, he still had someone left. And imagine Jesus saying this. He still had someone left, his beloved son. He sent him to them last of all. They respect my son, he said. But those tenants said to each other, this is the heir. Let us kill him and the inheritance will be ours. So they seized him and killed him and threw him out of the vineyard. It's John who takes us into the intimacy of Jesus and his father much more closely than the others, as I mentioned. And he has a favourite expression to do it, and I'd like to meditate on it with you now for a few moments. John's favourite expression for Jesus, who says in chapter 10, verse 30, just after the Good Shepherd scene, he says, the Father and I are one. And then a little later uses the expression I want to alert you to. The Father is in me and I am in the Father. John, who really explores this, doesn't go further than that. That's the loveliest way that he can speak about the relationship between Jesus and God the Father. It's obvious reading his Last Supper account. It comes back again and again, that refrain. I may read you some from the Last Supper. To have seen me is to have seen the Father. Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words I say to you, I do not speak as of myself. It's the Father living in me who is doing this work. You must believe me when I say that, here it is again, I am in the Father and the Father is in me. Later in chapter 14, on that day you'll understand that I am in the Father. You in me and I in you. And the last statement of the Last Supper discourse in John chapter 17. May they all be one, Father. May they be one in us as you are in me and I am in you. So that the world may believe that it was you who sent me. I've given them the glory you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, with me in them and you in me. It's a poetic phrase, and if you're looking at that phrase for a kind of clarity to the mind, you can't get it, because it's a love thing. It's a love statement. It's a poetry statement. It's a beautiful statement, but it's a statement about being in, two people in total communion. Jesus somehow being in the Father and the Father in him. This intimacy of Jesus with his Father is experienced in two general areas, which I'll now conclude with and then we'll have a break. One is in what we've learned, what I've been calling with you in other lectures, that Jesus' religious experience, a general word for the spiritual dimension of his life, his consciousness of being in the Father, wherever he was, whatever he was doing, whomever he spoke to, a dimension of his awareness much as you would have in your life if you're in love with someone. You might do a million things during the day, but that person, whether it be your wife, husband, child, whoever it could be, parent, is part of your environment. So with Jesus, the Father was at the heart of all his actions and all his relationships. That's true. But there are many other texts which indicate that Jesus, what we've learned to call prayer, the experience where not only is the consciousness of God present as a dimension of the life that we're leaving, but that one feels the need to go aside from other people and other actions and cherish that relationship in solitude. just as the two people who are in love would want to be alone at times, however beautiful their kids might be, or whatever. So this need to be, Jesus had it clearly. He went aside in, frequently we're told, he used to go up onto the mountain and spend the whole night in prayer before he elected the disciples, for example. Seeking his Father's will, wanting to be alone, needing to be, to experience this intimacy in silence. Luke is the gospel that I think, well, John, yes, but Luke particularly captures this. And it's interesting that in all the prayers of Jesus in Luke, invariably Jesus calls God Father. It's obviously something that just was so natural to Jesus. I've already told you how extraordinary it was, but to Jesus it was the natural way of speaking. Luke, these are all Luke, 10:21. Filled with joy by the Holy Spirit, Jesus said, I bless you, Father, for revealing this to little children. And presumably behind the word Father is the word Abba. The Our Father. Father, may your name be held holy. And on the cross, Father, forgive them. They know not what they are doing. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And this is perhaps the deepest point we're going to up for the moment, the prayer of the agony in the garden, where it's the only text where it's explicitly said, Jesus went into the garden, he threw himself on the ground and prayed, Abba, A-double-B-A, Abba, Father. Everything is possible for you. Take this cup away from me, but let it be as you, not I, would have it. Abba. Now we know from Paul's letters that the Christians were taught to say Abba. And whatever I've said to you tonight, this is a symbol of it all. That Abba, everyone knew what it was, no one had ever used it of God. Unthinkable, because the Father, the Lord and Father of the universe, yes, they have prayers like that. The source and authority and revelation teacher, yes. But Abba was a word used by people of their own dad. It was a very familiar word. It was a baby word, really, but kept up in adulthood, like our word dad or some word like that. Abba, and as you know, it's not a word, really, it's a sound that a baby makes. It's really just ba 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 ba, isn't it? And just a ba sound. So a ba 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 just means dad. It's presumably a happy sound and a sound of trust when the little child feels secure or something like that. So it means dad or father, but in a very intimate, trusting, familiar relationship that's there with the child. And Jesus said, unless you become a little child, you can't even enter the kingdom of heaven, because the kingdom of heaven is the kingdom of a father. Unless you're a child, you can't understand a father. Jesus was the child of God, the son of God. And whatever the intimacy of his experience as man in his psyche, whatever happened to him at the Jordan River, which confirmed and overwhelmed him, was an experience that had gone on all his life, obviously, as we'll come to see after the break. But whatever that experience was, what happened to Jesus is the way to test an experience. His natural, spontaneous, constant reaction was when he thought of God, he thought Abba. Which says something very intimate, doesn't it? And very beautiful and very simple and very trusting, and takes us, well, close into this relationship which we're trying to explore tonight, out of which all his loving came. Well, I'd like now to take us into another level of the same meditation.